Saxophone legend Sonny Rollins is attaching his legacy to Harlem in a big way. He's donating a life's worth of writings, recordings, and other materials to the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture at the New York Public Library. Rollins recently sat down with Jazz Night in America's Christian McBride and NPR's Audie Cornish to talk about it.
The reason why we're talking, Ms. Rollins, is because of your papers. You decided to turn over all of these papers. And I guess if you could just start, can you talk about why?
Well, actually, I have not been performing for a few years now. And I have all these papers, all of these archival things, I guess you would call them, which I have accumulated over a long career from the 1950s, I think, that we have material. And hopefully they can help another student, somebody that can get something from them. They can find out how a guy that got kicked to the ground kept getting up. So maybe a student can say, hey, I got kicked to the ground, but I'm going to get up just like Sonny did.
Mr. Rollins, it is indeed a great honor to speak with you as always. I miss you very much, and I'd like to thank you for just such great memorable experiences on stage with you and just inspiring so many with your music through the years. I wanted to ask you, you grew up just a few blocks from the Schomburg Center, which houses your papers. Was there some conscious thought of keeping your legacy in Harlem?
No, there wasn't. Actually, Christian, when the New York Public Library showed interest in acquiring my papers, it was the New York Public Library, and I thought it might have been down on 42nd Street where they have the two big lions, you know, that big public. So anyway, then I said, well, gee, it's going to be up at the Schomburg. And I was a little bit, I said, wait a minute now, I'm not for segregation. So what is this? Are they trying to ghettoize me or something like that? So then I realized that, no, hey, this is where they should be, because I'm very honored to be up there. They have Louis Armstrong's something by him, Oral History. They've got the Duke Ellington Society's papers there. They have A Great Day in Harlem's papers there. They have Don Redman, the great musician. You know Don Redman.
Yeah, absolutely.
His papers are there. I think Ron Carter, your colleague on bass, I think his papers are not at the New York Public Library. And so it's great. I'm really honored to, privileged to be there. So I'm happy about it. And why not? Why not have the Black Culture, which is a Schomburg for Black Culture? Yeah, let it be there. So my thoughts about it wasn't available to these other places, I had a little attitude about that, and I changed my mind. I said, no, I'm happy that it is at the Schomburg. Plus, I was born two blocks from the Schomburg. So it all fits in. It's like the unwritten hand, you know, the rights, that hand that we don't know about, that that's happening. Everything happens for a reason, man. And so I'm happy with it being in the Schomburg.
Now, Sonny Rollins, can you talk to us a little bit about what kind of papers you've turned over? Is there a particular item that you're really excited for scholars or people to see?
Well, to be frank with you, I have not really gone through these papers since they were collected. Now, I went through a little bit with the gentleman that collected them, James Goldwasser, and I saw a few, but there's so many things there from so long that I can say that I had a lot of Let's see, I had a lot of music notes. You know, I'm constantly trying to learn music and teach myself. So I had a lot of little notes to myself, of patterns, things that I had difficulty playing, how to do them myself. And there's some music books there. There's some personal notes between me, myself, I should say, and my wife. And there are a lot of personal things there. It really comprises a long period of my life. And when the truck pulled away from my home with all of that stuff, I felt, well, wait a minute, there I go. I'm going with that. Or am I here? I don't know. I'm there with the archives, and I'm here in my home. So it was a very interesting experience on the end. Actually, I had a dream a couple of days later in which I dreamt that somebody had come to my house and there was some burglars. And they had me there, you know, okay. And they were cleaning out my closet, taking everything. And then the next day I said, well, where did that dream come from? Then I realized that was the dream. The archivists had come here and taken all of these things. And this is a long explanation, I know, of what your question is, but there's a lot there that I don't even know what's there. But there's a lot there of music, pictures, a lot of things.
You mentioned that some of the notes are things you were teaching yourself. And that's interesting because people always talk about you as the great improviser, right? They think of improvisation as something where people are never writing anything down, and your archives show the opposite.
Well, I was considered myself maybe 80% self-taught. So I had a lot of instructional things there for myself that enabled me to improvise. You see, you have to have your basic, I have to have my basic material there. Then comes the next step, which is improvisation.
You say you were 80% self-taught. I'm curious about that other 20%. I know there were books and things that you discovered, but was there a particular person who acted sort of as a mentor to you, like as a saxophone mentor? I know how much you love Coleman Hawkins, but was he primarily your main man?
Well, he was primarily my main idol when I first really got into him around 1939. But I'm happy to say that all of the people that I encountered, the older guys, they were all wonderful mentors to me. All these guys, J.J. Johnson, the trombone player. Let's see, Oscar Pettiford, the bass player. Max Roach, the drummer. Of course, Thelonious Monk, piano. Bud Powell, piano. So all of these guys, they all showed me. They all mentored me. They all mentored me and showed me a lot. And so I really learned a lot from being around them.
It's hard to think of you, Sonny Rollins, as someone who feels like you're constantly having to learn because you were a prodigy, right? I mean, out of high school, you were already a pro, even though you hadn't been to any kind of formal music education.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I first played with Miles Davis in 1948. And then and I played with Monk around that time in the 40s. And so there I am with these gods of music. So I had a gift, you know, because music, you have to be gifted. It's not a matter of your intelligence or anything. You have to have a gift. Just as I'm sure for other professions. But musically, you have to have a gift. So I was fortunate. I don't like that word, fortunate. I was given a gift. I was blessed with a musical gift. And then I came upon these very great, and not just great musicians, but great people. See, these guys were great people, great human beings, great people. And I can say that all the people that I met, maybe one guy was great, but he didn't act great. But the rest, 99% of the great people that I was associated with were great human beings as well as great musicians. And that means a lot. It means a lot to me, and I'm trying to now live my life like that. Say, I've got a gift, musical gift, fine, but I want to be a human being, a good human being. And this is why the things in my archive, too, I need to always express that to young students. Everybody can have a gift. That's a gift. But then we have to be good human beings. That's what it's all about.
That was Sonny Rollins with Jazz Night in America host Christian McBride and NPR's Audie Cornish.